Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 63 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. This was kind of a biggie, and I still don't quite know what it means yet, but Outlander Stars did state that during what they're calling Droughtlander, which I think is very clever, starting this month, they will release never-before-seen footage on the 4th of each month until Outlander returns. So, and they have it's like a sneak peek, like a jigsaw puzzle thing with some missing pieces at the first exclusive they're going to be sending us. So, that, it could be anything, you guys. It could be extended scenes, things we've already seen. It could be just brand new things, but the image that they've given us currently looks like, you know, the first time she goes out to the stables with Jamie.
And episode 2, I think so.
And you can tell by what's missing that they're not showing us whoever's in the background. Because there's somebody standing there. You just can't see who it is. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited. I'm excited for anything new during our hiatus.
I would like if it was new stuff from new episodes. But, yeah. Anything new is nice.
And, I mean, a lot of the people, like, they put that out there. And almost all of the comments were, I just wish you'd show the next 8 episodes early. How about now?
I'm like, patience.
We also got a new photo from the Outlander Stars Instagram account, which is Lieutenant Cutie, also known as Tom Brittany, playing Lieutenant Foster in his costume, his red coat regalia with a costumer, I'm assuming, getting them all fashioned up. And last but definitely not least, it looks like our Jenny Fraser has joined Twitter. Laura Donnelly has joined. She is at DonnellyLaura1, and it looks like she did it on Halloween, which I think is kind of a nice little date to do that. And that was about it for announcements this week. It's getting a little dry in the Outlander announcement fields, but we're happy for anything we get. And now on to our read-along.
Discussion of Chapter 4, Dragonfly and Amber, titled Culloden.
Culloden. Now, when I first read this book, I had no knowledge of how to pronounce anything Scottish.
Oh, no, me either.
And I believe I thought it was Culloden, which is wrong.
I, however, have listened to the entire book on audiobook, so I know how everything is pronounced, as according to the regal Davina Porter.
Brianna and Roger are at Culloden in the Visitor's Center. Looking at a mannequin of the Duke of Cumberland, Brianna says, "What a mean little piggy face." What this reminds me of, and I didn't have it in my notes, but just saying that out loud reminded me of, isn't it Ender's Game in the second... Oh, no. Sorry. Wrong universe.
I was like, what?
Yes, I am right. Sorry. Ender's Game, Book 2, when he's on the other planet. And
I'm pretty sure it's not called Book 2.
No, but the second book of that series. And the life forms that they are still learning about, but they call them piggies, I think. And they're just awful to them. But anyway, they learn more about them, and it's interesting. But yeah, I just thought about that. So if you haven't checked out Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game series, I recommend them. Okay, so Roger basically says that, well, the Duke of Cumberland kind of was mean. We learn some of the details of the days after Culloden, that outside of the Battle of Culloden, they chased survivors into the hills, quote, burning and looting as they went. Women and children were turned out to starve, and then men shot down where they stood, with no effort to find out whether they'd ever fought for Charlie. He adds, one of the Duke's contemporaries said of him, he created a desert and called it peace. I wonder if there still is some strong feeling toward him, specifically in Scotland today. And this is me speaking for me. I'm not restating Roger's statement. Beth Kay made a good point. When Roger tells Bree Scots have long memories, I thought to myself, rather, the losing side has long memories. Connie shares, Roger says that one of the Duke's contemporaries said of him, he created a desert and called it peace. If one of the Duke's contemporaries ever did say that, Connie says, he was actually quoting Tacitus. Apparently, it was a line used in a 1964 docudrama about Culloden made by a man named Peter Watkins. And we actually will have a YouTube link to this film. Connie also shares with us a blog entry by Karen Henry of Outlandish Observations, in which she talks about some Gaelic English road signs that are throughout the Highlands. And it was interesting. She writes, in particular, the Gaelic name for Fort William, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce it, seems very close to the English word garrison. According to my friend, Kathy McGregor, the locals referred to it simply as the garrison because the fort was named after William, Duke of Cumberland, a.k.a. Butcher Billy, and they didn't want to speak his name. Karen says, not that I can blame them. So, back to my question, I wonder if there still are some strong feelings about this today by modern Scots.
Truly, not to get off topic, but it reminds me a lot of, that question reminds me a lot of the Cherokee, because their expulsion from the North Carolina mountains was similar in that they were told to go. I mean, there wasn't a battle, but they were told to go, and if they didn't cooperate, they were chased down and shot down. And a lot of the white man or America doesn't really look back on that time and think very strongly about it, you know, but anyone with Native family or Native roots, Native American roots, or if you grew up in that area, you know everything there is to know about it. You know, it's part of your personal history, so you do have strong feelings about it. So I would imagine, I mean, I don't know for sure, obviously, about the Scots, but it seems that, yes, what you said earlier, being on the losing side, it tends to stick with you longer.
I think it makes sense. Summer has, in our interview with Agav O'Brien, Summer also brought up, talking about modern-day Scotland, some of her time spent with people in Cherokee.
Right.
And
you make it sound like I was an exchange student working at, like, a village, and we were all, like, you know, trading blanket-making secrets.
Well, you can speak of it. I didn't do it, so I can't speak about your experience.
No, I mean, we worked on the reservation, and that's the experience that I have with the Native Americans. But, you know, they do. It's still to this day a very, like, hot topic there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would even go so far as to say completely different, as in, they still have a quote-unquote homeland, if you will. But the South, having lost the Civil War, still remembers.
Dude, that so, war is called the War of the Northern Aggression.
Yeah.
Not the Civil War,
yeah.
Which is what everyone else knows
that's, as. That's what I mean. So it's not... I think what Roger says and what Abby has echoed is actually very true. It's probably true that the Scots have long memories, or the Scots remember this, but I think what is even more global and something that we all share, or that all, I want to say all losers, that sounds terrible, but all of humankind shares, is that the losing side of any battle, losing sides have long memories.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about, even if you take it to a basic level, high school. Everyone's gone to high school of some kind. If you were picked on or anything bad that happened in high school is all that you remember about high school. Nobody remembers all the fun stuff. Nobody remembers all the...
Oh, I do. What? I do. I remember all the fun stuff.
You remember nothing else.
I didn't say that. I said I remember the fun stuff.
I'm just saying, predominantly, when people look back at high school, most people are like, I hated high school. People were so mean. I wasn't popular enough. I didn't have all the right friends.
I was super popular in high school. And the fact that you're laughing so hard at me
is not very
extremely
nice.
Telling. About how popular I actually was.
I just wish you could have seen the look on her face as she delivered that dryly.
I was very popular in high school. Definitely not because I was cool, but because I was involved in everything. It was like Cheers.
I was about to say, isn't that like a theme song?
High school, sometimes you wanna go. I never wanted to go to high school. In fact, if I had my dithers, I spent most of my high school days at the Bojangles down the street.
Well, thank goodness. Thank goodness none of us ever has our dithers, because if we did, we'd be a heck of a lot dithered or different today.
I'm on eHarmony trying to get dithered these days.
And with that, on to Teresa's comment. I really thought it was interesting as to why Charles Stewart was known as Bonnie Prince Charlie. The Gaelic for Charles sounds like Charlie. This totally makes sense, and I love the attention.
What just happened?
I have no idea.
I'll read to you what I wrote. This totally makes sense, and I love the attention to retail that Diana puts into her book.
Well, the last chapter was really all about retail therapy. It was
about retail. All the tchotchkes and the kitsch. Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, Lord. I asked you if you had your own adage about if it was over 100 pounds. Did you have anything you traveled with? Okay. The detail that Diana puts into her books. I'm a history nerd. Also, I found out that I can learn Scottish Gaelic through my library's Mango Languages subscription. I've heard of Mango Languages. I've heard of a
Live
few.
Mocha?
Yes, thank you. Oh, I'm embarrassed.
They email me all the time.
They do? I drink my Lycus Mauve.
Lycus what?
My mocha's live. My mic is low. Lord have mercy, Spooner. Okay.
Spooner? Did you just call me Spooner?
No, you don't know what I'm referring?
Apparently not.
Referring?
I don't even know what you're saying.
Spoonerism is when you swap the first two. Okay, whoa. Back to my script, which is awful.
Which is obviously fraught with
error. Teresa, I have also heard of Mango Languages. Whenever I move to a new place, the first thing I do, I'm not even lying, like before I'm even unpacked, is I go to the local library and I get a library card. Because you...
Oh my gosh, you're such a nerd.
No, not because I'm a nerd.
No, because although kind of.
Come on. I love it so much.
No, I'm not kidding. Because you know what you can do with library cards? You get a lot of free stuff.
I don't know what you can do with a library card.
Wait,
where do you get free stuff with a library card?
Like, seriously, the excitement level you just reached talking about a library card?
Oh, so you like books.
Well, books, but here's the thing. No, okay. So we have a podcast, right?
No.
Before I got involved with the podcast, I listened to tons of podcasts, but what kind of entered and started me on that was spending more and more time with audiobooks, and I was so enamored of having audiobooks, and how do I carry them with me, and that's how I first got my first iPod, and then I found podcasts. So there is a relationship there. Anyway, I couldn't afford purchasing all these audiobooks because even with regular books, you can get them used, and that's fine, but I love audiobooks, but... like paperbacks or like actual paperbacks or hardbacks, except for Diana Gabaldon's books, and I'm not even lying, as far as fiction goes, I don't purchase books. I get them from the library and I read them and I take them back, or I borrow the electronic versions that I can, the audiobooks from the library.
That was like straight out of Anne of Green Gables.
I knew you were gonna say that.
Sorry, Anne.
Oh, Summer.
I was actually thinking, I've never heard that colloquialism from California, but, you know.
California by way of Canada and Scotland.
Borrowed
a lot of audiobooks, and I still do if I can.
Been to a library in Atlanta.
Look, Ginger made me get a library card when she moved back from the last city she was in. I was like, what am I going to do with a library card? She's like, you can download audiobooks now. And I was like, what? So I went and got the library card, and literally, I promise you, the only thing I've used it for is for books for my daughter. Other than that, I'm just like, I don't have time.
Well, you never...
Which is silly, because I have an Audible account, and I get a free one every month. Not a free one.
I get one
credit every month for, like, my $12 or whatever I spend. And for whatever reason, that's fine for me. Like, I have not had the patience to try to navigate their system.
So, yes, I have heard of the Mango Languages subscription, which my library does subscribe to. And in other systems I've been to, there have been maybe other programs. But there's free homework help. I've taken advantage of that so much. It's very awesome. And as Summer reminded me earlier, Live Mocha is also another brand, another site. So there are a lot of options, but I do not believe Live Mocha offers Scottish Gaelic or Gaelic. However, it's nice to know that Mango Languages does, because that, again, it's kind of rare. Now, don't forget, check out the free programs that might be available to you through your local library, or if you're a student, you can have through your college library that you may have accessed through there. And of course, there's always learngaelic.net, which is for Scottish Gaelic out of Scotland. The site is out of Scotland.
I feel like the only way I will ever learn Scottish Gaelic is to have someone literally beat it into me. Like, be in a room where they, like, make me learn. Because otherwise, if I'm on a computer, I'm going to walk away. It's like at-home learning, like people who do the college learning at home. Never. I would never succeed at that. Because I would be like, doo-doo-doo, I'm going to do this today. And then be like, oh, I want to make a cup of coffee. And then once I'm in the kitchen, I'm going to go, oh, I need to do these dishes. And I'll do the dishes. And I'm like, oh, I need to go outside and check my garden. And then I'm going to go outside. And my day is going to be gone. And I'm going to be like, I learned nothing
because
today.
She spends hours in her garden.
Watching her garden grow.
Mary. I'm just saying, contrary. I didn't continue with my train of thought, but the problem is the stream of consciousness that goes on in my head will do anything to keep me from learning.
I'm going to learn Gaelic by my future husband whispering sweet Gaelic nothings in my ear.
So,
good luck with that.
Thanks. Brianna learns that Roger is indeed Scottish, his surname being Mackenzie, and only his adopted name being Wakefield. Samantha writes, Roger's own name is Mackenzie. This is my first time reading Dragonfly and Amber, but I'm going to assume this is really freaking important. Samantha, you might be onto something there.
Yep. I mean, I'm just not going to spoil nothing for Samantha.
Except there are other Mackenzies in the book, girl. Okay.
I mean, there's Mackenzies all over the book.
All over the walls.
Nope, not the walls.
His parents were killed in the war. He says there is a clan stone with Mackenzie on it, but of course there is no clan stone for Mackenzie. We did a quick peek into this, and yes, we've heard other people mention it as well. It seems that the Jacobite Mackenzies were prevented from joining the Jacobite army at the Battle of Culloden because they'd been attacked by British forces at the Battle of Littleferry. And the source is Angus Mackay's 1906, The Book of Mackay, page 191, and we'll have that. Probably a link to the Google book. It's been scanned into the Google book system. Brianna makes a chilling observation about the positions where the two commanders had stood behind their troops during the battle. Well back out of the way, I see. No chance of getting in the way of a stray bullet.
How convenient. Not just stood behind, he had a picnic set up.
Oh, Lord.
And he had a
Cumberland?
Picnic? No, yeah. Not Cumberland. Bonnie Prince Charlie had a picnic set up.
Well, we're talking about...
Well behind the lines. Both of them. But that's where the generals... I mean, that's what they were saying is the head honchos of both sides were nowhere near the fray.
As they continue to talk, Roger purposefully pulls back his Oxbridge speech and allows his Scottish accent to come out.
Because
he is
it's
happy.
Sexy.
Oh, well, yeah.
I'm not even in I even found in this accent sexy.
Even in the 60s, people knew to whip it out.
What?
He is
stop.
He is happy to have Brianna's reactions. Connie shares Oxbridge. It's Oxford and Cambridge universities regarded together. Yes.
Ah.
Thank you, Connie. Teresa says, and I really love that Roger lets his Scots accent flow because it makes Bree happy. Teresa, it makes everybody happy.
I was going to say, I don't know anyone who would complain. The only complaint I would have.
Claire would.
Of the Scots accent was when I first arrived in Scotland and we needed directions and we pulled over.
No hope.
And we asked him, it's like, hey, how do we get to blah, blah, blah? And he was like, I have no idea to this day what this man said to me, but we smiled, we thanked him, and we went back to our car and pulled the map back out.
It's hard to adjust your ear at first. I was talking to you the other day about...
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was. About a guy, I called him my French suitor. He was absolutely a sweet, sweet guy, but he was French with a very, very strong accent and wanted to talk to me on the phone all the time, and I could never understand what he was saying. So I just politely agreed with everything he said until I realized I'd worked myself into a date without meaning to. But yeah, it takes a long time to attune your ears to a new dialect, no matter what it is. But yeah, Scottish is particularly...
I'm not going to say I did not enjoy the conversation. I did. But not in the way he thought I did. He thought I was enjoying his giving me directions. I was just enjoying listening to the man talk.
You know what's funny, though? When I was in France last summer, I was having dinner with some of my friends, and they were telling me that the guys with the really thick southern accent, they had no idea what they were saying ever, because they have learned such a crisp American dialect that when you put those slurs and like the extra syllables and everything into it, they had no idea what, even though I think Southerners talk slower usually, you know, but they still would just nod and smile because they had no idea what these guys were saying because their dialects, their Southern accents were so strong.
I would agree with you they do talk slower, but sometimes when you talk so slow that you're stretching vowels out and syllables, it becomes unintelligible. To mm-hmm. somebody who's not a native English speaker, like, we listen for it because we're expecting it, and we hear enough that we recognize to be able
right.
to piece out what they're saying. But when they're using words you're not familiar with, it obviously makes it harder when they're not using the accent you're used to hearing those random right. words in. So
I get it.
Samantha shares, weird how she, meaning Brianna, is attracted to Scottish men. And
so
I,
weird.
I wrote,
that is not weird.
Yes, your sarcasm comes through very clearly, Samantha. I like Roger's description of the, quote, well of death, as well as of his telling her how people still leave, the purple and white heather at the memorial stones. She asks him if he'd done it, and he had. Then she asks him to show her which plant is heather. We assume so that she can do the same, although we're not shown that. Connie shares, well of death. The name is actually Well of the Dead and is marked by a stone to show where Alexander McGilvery of Dunmaglass, chief of Clan Chattan, fell during the Battle of Culloden. And we have a link we will share with you in our blog post for this episode that is from the National Trust of Scotland, Culloden, a part of their site. Ellen G. shares, the way Diana describes the moor at Culloden, it's almost like the response people have when they visit one of the camps in Poland, like Auschwitz. The sense of quiet that makes people who walk around very quiet and somber, the energy of that place is dead, and it's very low, and people do react to it.
Okay. Y'all, it's a giant graveyard.
Yeah.
You should be solemn while you're there. And if you're not affected by it, there's something wrong with you.
Ellen writes, wouldn't you happen to know that the stone Brianna stops at and fiddles with the heather at is the Phaser Stone?
There are no mistakes or coincidences in the Gabaldone universe.
Only plot convenience.
On the way back, Brianna says it's too bad her mom couldn't come with them. LOL. Roger silently disagrees. Then she puts her hand on his thigh, and he's having a hard time concentrating on her actual words and likely driving. Brianna explains that her mother isn't really ill and just has an upset stomach, but she does elaborate, quote, she seems awfully preoccupied, as though she's kind of worried about something. Roger feels a heaviness in the pit of his stomach, Diana writes. Inside, he's thinking, see, this is what's not fair, that I should be put in the middle like this. And when they get back, she asks if she can be more helpful with the boxes, and Roger says yes. Then when Brianna says maybe her mom will help too, Roger's face stiffens, but he keeps on smiling. It turns out it ends up being just Brianna after all. The next day, Claire had gone to the library to look up old phone directories, trying to find someone she used to know. This gets Roger's attention. Maybe the redheaded lover?
That's me.
Roger had found three local listings under the name Jamie Fraser. Roger says, well, I hope she finds him. Meaning, whatever friend she's looking for. This is my reaction now. What? Roger assumes it's a male, and Brianna didn't even flinch at that. She's just fine that Roger seems to think it's a male. Interesting. That's it?
Who's a male? I got lost.
Beth K. writes, the setting of the garage, the manse, etc. is described in an interesting way throughout this chapter. Getting into that more intimate, personal, yet clogged and jumbled space of the garage really offers some rich description and a unique place for character building.
We should definitely link to Hoarders right now.
Okay, all I heard was Hoarders.
I could just send you a picture
link
of
to
parts
Hoarders.
Of my house.
We can do that.
Because that's what I...
That's what you just thought of?
That's what I think of every time I read this chapter. I'm like, oh my god, Hoarders. And it makes my skin crawl. Well, I don't know why, but like that much stuff.
These contrasting depictions of the garage and of the stuff contained within allows for the Reverend to be both a credible researcher and local historian, as well as likable human being with a sentimental nature and a hoarder. But unlike, that
an
was
organized
my...
organized hoarder.
That was Ginger and Abby, not
There absolutely
not
was
Beth.
An organization involved with
in the
his hoarding habits. And it benefited them in the plot
the cleaning
for
out.
Him to have been such a convenient hoarder. But
Mom, this does not mean that my toys need to be organized and kept.
It could. Like miscellaneous Jacobites.
Listen... Miscellaneous Jacobites and Barbies with their heads pulled off are two completely different things.
And absolutely, there actually are no miscellaneous Jacobites because it's little men lying around in a box. No! Jacobites are people. It's Jacobites, miscellaneous.
But I keep...
Let's get this straight! Okay. And now she's going on
but
purpose.
But I really... I do it on purpose now. But now it is like funny.
I want to call the episode Miscellaneous Jacobites because...
I like to envision him opening a box and there being all these little guys and they're going, hey, what's up, Roger? I'm a miscellaneous Jacobite.
But unlike the suit and tie historian vision I have of Frank, Roger the historian is surrounded in filth, dust, rats, and grime. But he rolls up his sleeves and gets sweaty and dirty, using his muscles at opening windows sealed shut, hoisting boxes, and moving furniture.
Yes.
It is true that Frank could have very well done similar activities in his pursuit of history, but what we know of Frank as a scholar has to do more with glossy book covers. Afternoon.
You're the one who said the right words to make it start talking.
What? You're blaming your Siri on me?
Look, if you say, look, when it's plugged in, if you
what
say,
the hell did
if
I
you
say
anything that sounds like, hey Siri, it starts... It starts recording everything you say, like it's going to ask a question. And so I was turning it off because it was literally starting to type everything you were saying across my screen.
Okay, I'm going to start again. I want to see if I can do that again. It is true that Frank could have very well done similar activities in his pursuit of history. But what we know of Frank as a scholar has to do more with glossy book covers, afternoon tea sessions with amateur historians, and paid researchers. I am in no way suggesting Frank is not a proper... thorough historian, simply that he is portrayed in a very academic manner, while we see Roger as a more physical, active pursuer of facts and the past.
Get dirty, Roger.
But I would state that Frank is a very effective researcher and historian.
We're not talking about effectiveness. We're not talking about ability.
While they may
talking about picture.
While the Reverend may be an amateur, he's probably the most gifted amateur ever.
I think the biggest...
Considering...
Isn't the biggest...
I think the comparison she's making is how dirty Roger's willing to get. Whereas we see Frank as this very clean and pristine and...
Yeah, hygienic.
Sort of...
Works with books.
Tender man.
Clean books. Beth, very interesting. I really want to add to this, but I can't right now. Good observation, though. Roger has to walk a significant ways into the darkness and mess to find the hanging light Turner honor for the garage.
Dude, there's a real word for that.
You know, it's not a switch. It's a cord.
A cord.
It's a thing that hangs down and it turns it on.
A cord.
A cord.
The cord thing.
Now we just sound like we're describing a car.
Like a Honda. A cord.
Oh. It's hanging from the ceiling.
Or we are all in a cord.
Okay. So he has to go into the garage, into the dark, amongst the nasty bits and the boxes and the dust and the grime and the nastiness. As I said three times now, to get to this cord to turn the light on, is that symbolic at all? He's going into the dark to try and find the light. Oh, sorry. But yeah, just keep this in mind. It's going to be in the far, far back of your mind for a few books anyway. But, you know, I guess any journey of a historian is looking through and to try and find answers, right? To try and put things together, solve puzzles. So, I mean, if nothing else, not looking past this single chapter, it can be a little bit symbolic of the search a historian has in general. Hmm. You're going through blindly, literally, and you're trying to piece things together and find things. So we don't need to... At this point, we don't need to go too much deeper in that than that. Brianna looks at the boxes, and Roger tells her that the Rev kept journals. He wrote every night after supper. Roger tells Brianna to keep a lookout for anything marked parish register, or for villages in the area of Broch Turach. To which Brianna replies, I don't know any of the villages of that area. Like, Roger, come on now. She's learning, but she doesn't know, like, the geospace of that area. Place names.
Is that a real thing, or did you just make that up?
I probably made it up. It may work, it may not. We'll have to look it up after the fact. He tells her to look for Broch Morda, Marianan, and St. Kilda. Brianna shrieks at what was most likely a rat skidding through the tarps, and Roger offers to do a rat satire for her. Ellen, another listener, writes, a rat satire introduces us to Roger's singing and songwriting creativity. Connie shared Karen Henry of Outlandish Observations write-up in another one of her Friday Fun Facts back in January of this year. We'll link to this in our post. and it talked about the rat satire. Now, basically, a rat satire, as Roger tells Brianna, was an old Scottish custom. You could get rats or mice to go away from your abode if you composed a poem telling them how poor the eating was at the place, and how nice it would be for them to get better eating elsewhere. Connie writes, and of course, then there's the story of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, but why rats should be affected by songs or music, who knows? Teresa writes, I am really looking forward to seeing the scene in the garage between Bree and Roger. I mean, I could say that after every stinking scene I read. I mean, it just never ends, but I get it, I agree. But it's everything I look forward to.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, it's one of the first times that they're intimately alone. Because they are...
Her mom's not in the other room.
And they're not in a public place.
Yeah.
So they're intimately alone, and if it's cast well, like, this should be like fireworks. Like, this whole scene should be like fireworks between the two actors.
Well, when I play Brianna...
She is pretty tall.
I'm tall, and I'm redheaded, and I'm working on the notorious butt. But, yes, when I play this scene, I can guarantee fireworks. No, actually, my question is this a real thing? The whole, like, singing songs to rats? Like, an actual Scottish...
Well, right now, I don't know.
An old Scottish pastime?
Yes, yes, but it's not just rats. It apparently... So Roger comes upon a carton marked Jacobites, comma, miscellaneous.
Again.
Not again.
I think they were miscellaneous. Yes, they mentioned miscellaneous Jacobites in, like, the first chapter.
You mean Jacobites miscellaneous?
I'm going to say it that way every time because I think it's funny.
Okay, that's the title of the episode because I can't do it anymore. He sings his rat satire as he continues to get boxes and Brianna giggles. So they have a good little time there. They work till it's time to break for lunch. And as they're going in, Roger notices the sun on her hair and thought she looked medieval. And he kind of names her in his mind Our Lady of the Archives.
Before we get that far, I just want to
You mean now
out,
that after we've gone that far? You want to go back a little bit? Okay.
I want to go back because I want to point out that Brianna pulls a jackknife from her pocket.
Yes.
She is BA, and I like that.
She's totally BA.
She's BA, and we learn more about how she became so BA later on.
I know, I have so much to say, and I can't
say
it.
You can't say it!
But what I will say is that while I would agree that Diana would put in mostly things that were 100% accurate, I want to know how many modern-day Scots sing satires or compose satires
or know what they are.
To rats.
No, I'd be curious. So Brianna sees a box labeled Randall. Connie writes, Brianna has found a box with the name Randall on it. Roger has mixed feelings, but Brianna's excitement was unalloyed. The look on Summer's face just now was awesome. Yes, it is actually, and I think she quotes it. We can look the pronunciation up, but yes, it is an actual word. And I'm not saying Connie does not have it in her vocabulary
but Diana used it,
okay, yes.
Okay, then I'll buy it.
Summer, do you know what an alloy is? So something that's unalloyed is pure because it's not mixed. Okay. So love this. This is from Ginger
nerding out.
Kind of a little bit. I love this. Another literary use of a scientific term. I love that Diana comes out in, well, her writing
and
her
writings.
That's what I'm saying. Last chapter, it was solubility.
Right.
And this chapter, it's metal alloys.
Were you waiting for me to say that out loud?
No, I was trying to figure out how to say that correctly.
Okay, just checking. I think I have it right. Dropped the ball on that or not.
Absquatulate.
Yes.
That's her favorite word. I like that word, too. But I also like...
I think she's, like, bringing
Octothorpe.
It back. I think she needs a shirt that says, like,
I'm bringing Absquatulate back.
Ow. The box contained photostats, and I looked this up. It's product of an early copy machine. From pages from parish registries, army muster lists, letters, a notebook, photographs, and a folder with Randall printed on the cover. Julie writes, my only issue with these chapters is how could Brianna not have questioned her mother and Frank regarding her looks? She obviously doesn't look like Frank. All kids are especially conscious of their need to belong and look like family. Certainly, this issue had to have come up throughout her childhood. I know it's not a big deal, but this has crossed my mind more than once when reading Dragonfly and Amber.
Okay.
That's a good point.
So what I have to say about that is that, in my opinion, there's so much about recessive genes.
Yeah.
That, and we also have to acknowledge the fact that neither Claire nor Frank were raising Bree around any family. I don't think
That's
either
true.
Of them had any family. So there's no way to say whether or not there was someone very tall and redheaded in either of their family histories. So I totally could see that she would totally just assume that, no, these are my parents. They've never indicated that that was not the case. So for me, that didn't bother me so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's true that right now my mother looks like a miniature copy of myself. But growing up, especially once I hit my growth spurt, all of the women in my family, men and women, I mean, all of the women in my family on my mom and my dad's side are short and dark haired. And I was tall and blonde. From the time I was 12, I was 5'10". So I spent many years of my life going, I don't, who am I? Who do I look like?
I'm Jean Valjean.
But honestly, I have the body type and size and everything of my great-grandfather.
I was about to say,
on my mom's
man.
Side. So, yeah, recessive traits can come from anywhere. Please know when I say this that I am by choice a redhead. So I love gingers, but it's the whole redheaded stepchild complex because they're called the redhead stepchild because usually redheads are so recessive that you have no idea where
when they're
going to
pop out.
Yeah, and you have no idea, and they can pop up in a family with no other red hair in it.
Randomly. I promised you my daughter popped out with like peach colored hair. It very swiftly turned to blonde, but there was a few days when she had somewhere between orange and peach hair.
You don't have to promise me that. I was there.
That's right, you were.
That's my point. It's like she came out, and I was like, no one in my family has that color hair. And it faded to blonde, but there was a few days when she did, in fact, have literally peach-colored hair.
So the last thing that we mentioned that she found actually was Frank's family tree. It started in 1633 and ended with the marriage of Frank and Claire in 1937. And Connie shares, Claire was about 19 when they married. This gives us a little bit, you know, a little
bit
more.
She married Frank?
Yes.
Okay.
They also find a letter of commission in the army signed by His Royal Majesty King George II in 1735 for Jonathan Wolverton Randall. Roger tells her that after Culloden, most of the English dead, the officers at least, would have been shipped home for burial. They are interrupted by Fiona and someone else to take away the Rev's truck.
Of course they are.
Always. He puts the stuff back in the box and gives it to Rihanna, all except for the gray notebook. He says it looks like one of the Rev's journals, but still wonders if this is true. Brianna agrees to come back the next day and help again. In his thoughts of the Rev and his journals, he describes him with a bald head, but I like James Fleet just fine. Looking at the journal, the entry for May 7th mentions Claire's disappearance and return. That he'd met with her and that he felt awful for them both, meaning Claire and Frank. And that he was disgusted that the doctor had released her health status, the fact that she was pregnant, to other people. Then again, on May 10th, he'd done his best to associate publicly with Frank and his wife, trying to help quell some of the gossip. What Frank must have felt those early days is just mind-blowing. Quote, words gone round that she's demented. Even makes a note to make a sermon on the evils of gossip, the Reverend does. That on May 12th, again, he can't get away from the thought that Claire isn't deranged. He thinks she has a secret she won't share, and he's convinced that Claire has told Frank, but Frank is not speaking of it. The Reverend tells them both that he is there to help in any way he can. May 14th, Frank has asked the Reverend for help, but he doesn't understand why, and he is not to mention any of it to Claire. He mentions Jonathan Randall and James Fraser. Roger's thinking, what connection could there be between an English army captain who died at Culloden and a man whose name was linked with Claire's disappearance in the 20th century? Mrs. Graham had an appendectomy. Derek Gowan, the chronic drunk, he writes about. Several listeners mentioned him and wondered, as I did, this is Ginger, if he were not related to our beloved Ned Gowan. And I did think that too. I wondered that.
You're right.
Abby just had a...
I never put those together.
So June 18th, Claire's pregnancy is dangerous and Frank asks for his prayers. The Reverend also told Frank of his discovery that Jonathan Randall's grave is at St. Kilda. So now we're back in the 20th century. Back at Claire and Brianna's room, Roger invited them to St. Kilda. And, quote, interesting old church. She thinks of maybe bringing her plant press along and getting some crowned vetch for Dr. Abernathy and his, quote, research. I wonder what research this is. Do we know yet anything about Dr. Abernathy and his research? Nothing yet.
Not at this point, but okay. I do wonder if it's the same plant press that she was gifted.
I don't know.
By the gentleman in, and I can't remember his name at this point, but the gentleman
the in botanist the botanist guy?
The first, yes.
Yeah. In the first book. Claire is thinking about the next day and how it might finally be the chance to tell them about what she really needs to tell them. Before she sleeps, though, she thinks of the biblical quotation, "Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof." Basically, don't borrow trouble. The New American Standard Bible, this is actually a verse from Matthew, I believe, and Matthew 6:34. So in the New American Standard Bible translation is, "Each day has enough trouble of its own." And today's English version is, "There is no need to add to the troubles each day brings." The New Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition says, "So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today." So we have a few translations there into English, various English biblical translations, and but I think we get the gist. I've provided those quotes as well. And Claire is dreaming, or as Connie puts it in her note outline, "Claire has a horny dream." Samantha writes, "Claire is dreaming of Jamie. Ugh, where is he?" Yes, Samantha, a lot of us, again, whiplash, a lot of us are wondering what the heck happened between the end of one and the beginning of two. We know exactly
where he is. Well, not there.
We know when he is. We don't know where he is.
That's my point, though. It's like we totally get that she's not with him. They're not in the same time period, and something big happened, and we
something's,
just don't know what
it something's is Something's up or was up. And Claire comes awake from this dream with a start. She is sweating, and she is likely having a BCBC dream.
A what?
A BCBC.
I'm going to need you to describe that a little more.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
Okay, why was I supposed to know that? I know what brown chicken, brown cow means, but why was I supposed to know brown chicken, brown cow? It sounds a lot like brown chicken, brown cow.
Oh, yeah. Got it now.
But I don't know why I was supposed to get that from BCBC, honestly.
Did you
come up with that yourself?
No, I've read it.
Where?
Someone put it on Twitter, and it...
She's going to say that because, honestly, the odds of somebody actually having put that on Twitter since Twitter was invented is probably...
Pretty good.
...possible. However, let's be honest. I don't think you've been trolling Twitter looking for BCBC.
That's
intend true.
To now,
though.
Oh, okay. #BCBC. So how do I say? Okay.
Can we start that?
So it's I'll take it out.
No, you leave it. You leave it.
I hate when I have a BCBC cow with...
You don't have cows.
Is that a second, like a brown chicken, brown cow, cow?
I need an extra cow sometimes.
She is sweating and she is likely having a sexy time dream. Am I wrong? She had the impression of, quote, "hands that gripped me, rough and urgent, not wooing but compelling." Diana gives us a beautiful description of what it's like being a mother, observing your infant nurse grow, become an I am. And she hopes that Brianna's core is still reachable.
I want you to know that you said infant nurse, and what I saw in my head, it was like a baby in a nurse's outfit. I know that's not what you said.
I said infant nurse.
But that's what I saw. It was like an infant nurse. I was like, I can't even. No, that just killed me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
She hopes that Brianna's core is still reachable. She recognizes that she herself no longer has the isolation of I am, and no protection to shield her from the softness within. And I wrote, isn't that a little reminiscent of Jamie's description in Outlander of the small, naked part of himself that Randall has made into something that was now homeless? He broke that shelter. Remember, he talks about that little thing? And it's like his soul, right? It's,
yeah.
And that he was there was nowhere... Yes, but there was nowhere for him that he could hide once Randall got done with him.
Right.
And Claire, doesn't he say at the very end that he feels he now had like a lean-to?
Mm-hmm.
See, I can bring that things together.
Yeah, just stop saying infant nurse.
And the voice that he had spoken to Claire, it had said, "You are mine, mine, and I will not let you go."
And I feel like that's going to come back, y'all.
It might. I'm guessing it's Jamie. I mean, ..
Y'all, seriously?
That's all I wrote.
That's a silly thing to say. I mean, everyone who's read this book has not stopped here. For the most part, has not stopped here. So for you to be like,
that's
I'm
just
going to say, we're guessing it's Jamie. Everyone knows it's Jamie, right? Am I wrong? Am I wrong? No one's going to agree with me right now, but I'm not wrong.
So anyway, a very interesting chapter. A little bit more going on here than in chapter 3. A little bit, you know, more stuff. And also, a heck of a... You guys, you readers... Well, readers, yes. But you readers and listeners who contribute, holy crap, dang. You guys, like... I could not... This is put this out there. We promise to include as many people who send us comments and stuff in as we can. And as much as we can. Every single person and as much as each person contributes. If you guys keep doing like you're doing, which we hope because we love to hear from you guys.
Oh, my God.
I can't... it takes me so...
You guys, what you don't realize is that what you're doing is making Ginger's job that much easier. She doesn't even have to read at this point. She can just get all of your little synopses.
Not true.
And your little comments, and then she doesn't have to read. She just reads all of your comments, and then I make snarkiness over on my side of the room.
I always
read. Think about who you're talking about, though. Of course Ginger's going to read and take notes. She's going to go to the library.
She's going to do that anymore.
Use her library card. Let's focus. She absquatulates the BCBC dream.
But what I said was, she won't need to read. Whether or not she actually reads is a completely different story. You are making her not need to read.
Here's the thing. If I don't read and take notes and know the general sequence of what happens, I won't know where to put their stuff. It'll just be a mess of things people put in. I have to take their stuff and fit it into context, and I have to see if I've already mentioned it, I can't include what they say. So I have to be... It's very deliberate... Whether or not there's two things that would allow us or not allow us to include someone's comments. Number one, sheer volume. It's just not possible sometimes. Or if I've already said it and another person has said it as well.
So I guess that wraps up chapter 4 of our read-along of Dragonfly and Amber. We would like to send a great thanks out to friend of the show, Miss Abby from Georgia.
The A.
Georgia. From the A.
And I'm sorry, the A always makes me think of the A. And as we did for Lene, we will also share Abby's...
She's online, y'all.
She's online. Find her on Twitter. At Abolicious.
I'm pretty hilarious. You should follow me.
As always, thanks so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.
Dreamt it last night that my young